Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 121 of season 11 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off part 9 of this miniseries is my good friend Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Welcome back once again, Nick.
Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I missed you over the weekend, but I'm glad that we're able to reconnect on this Monday.
I can't think of a better way to start the week.
Okay, we did finish all the concentration camp stuff, so I guess that sort of makes sense.
Yeah,
I can accept that answer. Yeah, it would be a little strange if the episodes I did with Niall last week, if you were to say you're glad to be back to talk about those. But,
it would be problematic to say the least.
Yeah. Yes. But that's okay. That, unfortunately, that's part of the rules of Movies by Minute. You got to talk about what's on screen. You can't skip over things. So nothing you can do about that. And you also get the opportunity to only talk about a minute and 22 seconds. So, that's also you get closer to the pure idea of minute by minute.
Exactly.
Episode 121 begins with Webster making an observation and ends with the end scroll of part 9. So we ended things on Friday with the men looking out at the town square, and Nixon told everyone that Hitler's dead and that they're going to be going to Austria. Hitler's dead, and what do you win? You get a trip to Austria. Get to go to the Alps. So the men started leaving, and Nixon was still stayed there, and that's how this begins. Nixon is standing there looking out at everything going on, and then Webster says something very interesting that Jay a few weeks ago mentioned to us that he hated this line, but it's still there. And Webster says, "Should have killed himself 3 years ago. Saved us a lot of trouble." And Nixon agrees with him, and he goes, "Yeah, he should have, but he didn't." So I guess it's woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
Not much you can really do about that. I mean, I somewhat disagree with Jay. I do like the line, because again, it's not an official line. It's just one of the guys is basically saying, "Look, had he killed himself 3 years ago, it would have saved us." As America, I think Jay's problem more had to do with the fact that the war was more than 3 years long, but mm-hmm. the American perspective of it was only 3 years.
Yeah.
To be accurate, it was 3.5 years, because if Pearl Harbor was attacked in the end of 1941, and now we're on April 30th, 1945, so it's been almost 3.5 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And if he would have killed himself 3 years earlier, that also wouldn't have helped from that perspective, because they still would have the men would have all still had to start training and get ready to fight until the whole thing ended. But
yeah, just would have been different.
That's right. But the bottom line is that Nixon's right. Maybe he should have, but he didn't. So, that's what we're doing here. And, Nixon just looks around. And then the camera pans once again onto the street, onto the town square here. And it's pretty interesting. You have these four, this quartet, playing violin music. Three on violins, one on a cello. And, I'm trying to understand what's really going on in this. Because we talked about on Friday the fact that there was martial law and that everyone had to go work in the camp. But this isn't the camp. This is the town. These are people who who theoretically have to clean up their own town from the rubble, from all the bombings and stuff like that. So I'm not really sure, you know, what they're trying to show us here. Like, why would they have a quartet playing them? You know, like, this reminds me, obviously, of the whole thing with the, you know, the music on Titanic and stuff like that. But, I mean, and it's a great scene. I like it. I love the music. I love the way that it plays out. But something just doesn't seem to fit in here.
Yeah, it's interesting because the guys are sitting there playing. There's a fellow sitting on a stack of block. And I'm thinking maybe it's something like kind of artistic where nobody sees them. And it's just these people playing music, maybe like a requiem of some sorts. But we clearly see as the camera pans soldiers in the background leaning up against a Jeep looking onward at them playing. Yep. There's another feller walking past. He's got two chairs. He sets them down. I'm like, it maybe everybody's just taking a break from the cleanup for a split second. Maybe these guys have asthma and they can't do like physical labor or something. I'm not really sure. But then I'm like, why are they playing music? Then again, why are they playing somber music? But what other kind of music are you going to play? You're not going to play something like really upbeat and peppy when you're cleaning up debris and rubble and can probably smell, you know, death from the camp nearby and going through everything that you've been going through. I mean, maybe that's what this is. Maybe this is them playing a requiem for the town, playing a song for what had happened and just something to encapsulate the moment and then move on. But again, it's like, why, you know, other than some type of poetry or some type of artistic reason, like why, from a logistic standpoint, why?
Yeah.
And that still got me, you know, kind of puzzled as well. Because like you said, it's martial law. They should be helping elsewhere, but I don't know. I found it interesting. It's a nice song. It's music that kind of, you know, sums everything up, but it just still feels, it's the thing that feels most out of place in the entire series.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I've talked about that was also, that felt out of place. And I can't think of anything right now.
Yeah, but it's also not so out of place that it completely takes you out of the show or ruins any type of, you know, feeling of being in that moment. It's not like it's so stark in that way, but it's definitely just like a really interesting, like, come down from whichever, because even behind the final violin player, as he pulls his bow, there's a soldier talking to a woman who knows about what. There's more empty tables and chairs. And then he just kind of closes that case. And then off we go to our title cards. And it's just, I don't know, maybe it's this way. It's like a period to a sentence, if you will, but just a very poetic period.
Right. Okay. I just did a very quick search and I got a very interesting answer from ChatGPT. As to why there's music here. So I'm just going to read what it says. The quartet playing at the beginning and end of episode 9 is a deliberate, powerful cinematic device used to highlight the profound duality of German culture and the universal tragedy of the war. The theme features a local German quartet standing among the ruins of their bombed-out town, playing the somber sixth movement of Beethoven's string quartet number 14 in C-sharp minor. So it talks about the various themes. There's the duality of humanity and culture, the distinction of identity, Beethoven versus Mozart. There's a musical bookend of defeat and rebuilding. So I don't know. It also talks here about that it claims that it's connected to the fact that in Schindler's List, which we also talked about on Friday, that Spielberg had an SS officer playing classical music on a piano during the liquidation of the ghetto. I don't know.
It's an artistic juxtaposition,
though. Yes. Yeah. That I guess that's the way you can look at it. You know, I can't say I'm. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what it's trying to tell us. But you know, I do agree with you that this is definitely among one of the strangest things in this entire series. You know, from that person, something that just feels out of place. You know, maybe you and I are just not artistic enough to understand it. Maybe that's
a strong possibility.
Yeah. Okay. That's what it's fine. And as the music continues, we see that they decide that they're gonna start packing up. I'm trying to remember, and I can't check that as we're talking right now, but I think the music continues in the background even though they're not playing. Yeah. So it's.
I it does, but then
Oh, then
it
it moves.
stops when we hit the title
Right,
cards.
because then it moves into the into the Michael Kamen music, which in my opinion, as much as I think that Beethoven and Mozart are great, I think Michael Kamen is better. I know a lot of people disagree with me on that, but I can relate more to the music of Michael Kamen. That's what it comes down to. Then we get the end title card, which says during the following months, Allied forces discovered numerous POW concentration and death camps. These camps were part of the Nazi attempt to effect the final solution to the Jewish question.
Well, it's funny when that popped, not funny. It's interesting when that popped up because for the I had always heard, again, going back to history classes, final solution, final solution. But this was the first time that it kind of dawned on me that, oh, there was a Jewish question. This is the final solution to the Jewish question. But then, like you said, what is the Jewish question? And that's always been kind of interesting
Well,
to
the Jewish
me
question is
is
let's, how do we get rid of them? That's what it comes down
Yeah, I guess that's the one, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the over, the overall question that was constantly being asked then, and is still being asked today.
But to an extent, I mean, that's the solution, realistically, to like any question. How do we get rid of this
That's right,
problem?
math.
You get rid of them all, like, and that's such a dark thing to say and a weird thing to chuckle through, but to not deal with it with such a heavy topic, and let the weight of that crush you, like that is it is just a really, man, history is weird, isn't it?
Well, the discussing this reminds me, I think about 2 weeks ago, a friend of the show, Alan Sanders, mentioned on his show about Conspiracy, the movie Conspiracy, which also came out in 2001. Have you ever seen that?
I don't think
Okay,
so,
it
no.
was an HBO made for TV movie about the German conference making the decision as to what they're going to do with the Jews. And it stars Kenneth Branagh and trying to think of what was it? Again, it has some great.
Oh, is that him and Stanley Tucci?
Yes, Stanley Tucci. That's the one.
So I've seen the artwork and I've seen the not the artwork. I've seen like the posters and the DVD for it, but I've never watched it. So I know what you're talking about, but I haven't
Right,
seen
so
it.
I actually rewatched it after Alan mentioned it, and I was just amazed once again at the way that movie is written out. I don't know how close to the accurate it was, but it was very powerful. That you could just have a meal, and at this meal, you're making this type of decision. They're having a luncheon.
Yeah, because I think it's just a matter of just how do you strip away humanity?
Correct.
If you could strip away humanity and just talk about something as like a good or a service, and try not to give it any humanistic traits whatsoever, in a weird way you compartmentalize that, then it becomes like kind of easier, I guess. But it's just like you said, how do you do that? How do you just sit down one day and go, hey, I'm thinking of doing this, and then someone else goes, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. Let's get some others involved. It's just such it's insanity. It's true insanity and horrifying.
Yes.
And like absolutely horrifying above all, like to think that, and it was if it's a meeting or a conference or like that, like to think that someone probably took notes or that they had to get, posters or diagrams drawn up and like blueprints for things, like that's even crazier to imagine you're at home working on something and maybe your wife comes by, honey, what are you working on? Oh, just some building designs. Like it just again, the lack of humanity with everything, just horrifying and horrifying.
Right. Sure. No one is saying that the Nazis are good.
That's true. That is true.
So it's understandable that it would be horrifying. And then the crawl continues on the screen. And between 1942 and 1945, 5 million ethnic minorities and 6 million Jews were murdered, many of them in the camps. I do like the way that, I mean, Easy Company themselves were, they only were at Landsberg camp for 2 days or whatever it is, but they were exposed to the horrors of what was going on, deep in German territory. And the fact that they, first of all, devoted an entire part of this to this particular aspect, of their I guess World War II journey, says so much about the way that it affected the men. And it in some ways gave them purpose, or gave a name to their purpose, I guess you can say. So I like the way that they do that, and I think that the closing scroll here really hits it home with what they're trying to tell us. So I like that.
Yeah, it's powerful. And this is something where you don't need, visuals. It's just the words tell it all. And it's not even like long paragraphs or anything taxing to read. It's just three very quick sentences and powerful sentences at that.
And again, they're assuming at this point that most people in 2001 were aware of what atrocities happened during World War II. So even watching it 25 years later, you're still you get the gut punch of it. So I like the way they did that. So yeah, that's the way that this 1 minute and 22 second segment ends. So Nick, did you have anything else you wanted to add about this?
No, just it's powerful. Even with the not as much it's not really a dialogue heavy segment, but the visuals convey everything, and it just speaks to the power that television, really very well done television, can have.
Yeah, it's very true. All right, so today's segment is World War II movie trivia potpourri. So Nick is going to get five World War II movie trivia questions, and we're going to see if Nick is as aware of World War II movies as he is. Let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Spinning around and around the wheel again. In the 1955 movie The Man Who Never Was, who played the lead character?
Oof.
Have you ever seen it?
I have not, nor have I heard of it, so I know he's not in this movie. Well, maybe I don't know he's not in this movie, but I'm just gonna say Humphrey Bogart.
No, the answer is Clifton Webb. It's a movie that originated the idea of showing us what happened in Operation Mincemeat, where basically
Okay.
the Allies wanted to fool the Germans into thinking that the initial attack into Europe was going to come from somewhere in the Mediterranean, as opposed to coming from Normandy. So they took a corpse of I believe British officer, dressed him up as a as a high-ranking officer, and give they gave him fake documents attached to the body, and left it in an area where the Germans will find it and give them the false information as to where they need to go seek out where they think that the invasion of Europe is going to come from.
Huh. I'm gonna have to check that out then.
To me, I think it's a great movie, and it's actually funny. I was just talking with a friend of mine about that movie 5 minutes before we started recording. So,
Well,
So that works. Definitely works.
Yes.
All right, let's spin the wheel for your next question. There's still a lot of 30 Dozen and Great Escape movie questions. So you and Saving Private Ryan ones. So you never know.
O stands for a softball.
And you actually just got a Saving Private Ryan question. All right, so in Saving Private Ryan, what is the last name of the brothers whose story inspired the movie?
Ryan?
No, Ryan is in the movie. It's
Right.
based on a story of four real brothers, one of them who was in the 506. There were four brothers that they thought were all killed, and in the end they weren't. It's similar to the Bixby story, but I guess you don't know that one. It's
I don't, so I'm just going to say the Smith brothers.
Nylund brothers. Nylund brothers.
Okay, Nylon Brothers. Okay.
The one of the Nylund brothers was like best friends with Skip Mark, who was killed with Alex Spinkala, in the foxhole in Bestowe. All right. So you see, you thought that was gonna be a softball, but apparently
It
it
was a
was a curveball.
curveball.
There you go. All right. Let's spin the wheel for your third question. In the movie The Bridge on the River Kwai, who plays Commander Shears?
Is it a trick question? I'm just Alec Guinness,
No,
right?
he's Colonel Nicholson.
I can't think of anybody else outside of Alec Guinness for that movie. And it's awful because I watched that one. And it's a good
It's a
movie.
great
Alec
movie, and I
Guinness is great in
actually,
that movie.
once again, this is it's a movie I just watched the other day. I watched it
Yeah, I
four
know it's
days ago,
incorrect, but I'm going to stick with Alec Guinness.
I believe. Okay, the answer is William Holden. Do you remember William Holden being in the movie?
I sure don't.
That's fine.
I sure
All
don't.
right, let's spin the wheel again for your fourth question. I know you have it in you, Nick. You can do it. You can do it.
I believe.
All right, here's another possible curveball. Or maybe it's a softball. You never know. In the movie The Great Escape, Danny, played by Charles Bronson, writes a number when they start digging one of the tunnels. So how many tunnels has he dug?
Oh, we've talked about this
Yes, we
movie
have.
together, and I feel like
We didn't have that scene. We didn't have
we
that scene
were.
because we had the distillery scene. I remember that.
I know we had the distillery scene, but I can remember specifically the tunnel scene because I remember talking about Bronson just in general, but I do remember the distillery scene, and I was ready to talk. That's in my mind. I'm like, here we go. We're gonna talk about the trombone and
That's
the
right.
tuba, but
There you go.
no,
We
no.
noticed the trombone. No,
The number five is jumping into my head, but I don't think that's
it's
right.
higher than five.
Are you six?
We'll be here all night if you keep
I'll take one more genuine swing. If it's not five, it's more than that. I'll say 15.
17, 17. You're close. You're close.
17. Okay.
All right, let's go for your final question, which I'm sure you'll be happy that we're finishing.
Well, it's reminding me that I should go back and rewatch these
Yes.
movies.
Okay. Wow, and you get another great escape question. Okay, in the movie The Great Escape, who plays the Scrounger, Henley?
Well, I know it's not that we know for sure. We know it's not Bronson.
That we know for
It
sure.
wasn't
Yes.
Attenborough. For some reason, I want to say James Cagney, but I don't think that's right. I'm mixing up the last name here.
You got the first name right, but you got the last name
I'm gonna stick with James, even though I can't come with up with the last name right now. James Garner.
There you go. Excellent.
There we are.
See,
We got that one.
you've redeemed yourself.
Barely, just barely.
Just barely, but you still did
This old memory of mine.
it. Isn't the song "This Old Heart of Mine"? But yeah, that's. All right, so now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel and see if it's one that you actually have seen, hopefully.
And know the full title of.
Maybe. This is a movie. Okay. This is a movie from 1979 about a nurse in England during World War II that falls in love with an American pilot, even though she herself is married to a spy. It was directed by Peter Hames, and it stars Leslie Ann Down, Christopher Plummer, and Harrison Ford as the American pilot. Do you have any idea what World War II movie this is?
No, I. 1979, Harrison Ford's in. You said Leslie Ann Dow?
Yeah.
Leslie Ann Dow. Now you got me beat on this one. The only thing I can think of late '70s with Harrison Ford would have been Star Wars or Indiana Jones, but I know those don't land on 79. Those are either before or after. So you got me beat on this one.
Right. Okay. Well, first of all, Raiders of the Lost Ark was 81. So yeah.
He could have been filming it in 79.
Oh, he could have. That's true. But and Star Wars doesn't really have much of a Holocaust theme to it or World War II theme. That one doesn't fit in either.
Right.
This is a movie called Hanover Street.
Okay, this is new for me. I've never heard of this before.
Well, isn't that one of the reasons I'm here? You enlighten me about music, and I enlighten you about movies.
I got a whole list going now.
All right, good. And I hope by the next time that we record, you'll have seen all of those. I will ask you when we get there. next season, not this season. Oh, I'll give you a pass.
I was going to say, I appreciate that.
Yeah, you don't have 3 days to watch all of those movies. Yeah. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to point out about part 9?
No, I'm set.
All right. So Nick, why don't you tell people where they can find Nick Rehack?
You can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com on the show Lyrical Innuendo. Myself and Bubba Wheat, we take a song. We look at its lyrics and we determine if it's about sex, drugs, or is it just good old-fashioned rock and roll. You can also find me over there on the program Play MST for Me. Jason Soto and myself are watching every episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 starting from the beginning. And every so often, you can find me over on the Exploding Helicopter podcast with Will Slater. Recent episodes, we've talked about the film Wedlock, Half Past Dead, Godzilla King of the Monsters. He and I think it's, if not later today, then maybe tomorrow, he and I are going to be talking about Half Past Dead 2. So keep your eyes and ears out for that episode later this summer.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movieround.net. All right. So, Nick is going to take a break for a few days from us because tomorrow and one second. I have to remember what day we're on today. Nick is going to take a little break from us tomorrow and Wednesday. We will have interview episodes, and then on Thursday, Jay will be back to open up episode 10 or part 10. And so, Nick will be back on Friday. Looking forward to talking to Nick again on Friday. But until then, Curahee!
Curahee!